Thank you, Jonga, and a blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, April 7, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemire.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Some members of Missing Itai Dzamara, leader of Occupy Africa Unity Square, say they are now living in fear as they are being allegedly followed by suspected members of Zimbabwe's National Spy Network, the Central Intelligence Organization, or CIO.
Direct from Washington, the Voice of America.
I saw the car parked by my gate. Then I left the house the following morning around 3 a.m. The car was still there. With one man, the driver was seated, the car was still on, the back door was slightly opened. I left it there, and then I saw it on Friday night.
Several residents' groups discuss controversial prepaid water meters as Jibinge prepares to fight a tender for installing them in the town.
AMREF has made a resolution that whenever we hear of these raw authorities, towns, it is talking about installing prepaid water meters. We will definitely make sure that we deploy our leadership.
And scores of foreigners, including Zimbabweans living in South Africa, have fled their homes and sought refuge in police stations following weekend xenophobic attacks.
And there's a lot of fear within the foreign nationals in South Africa, particularly now it extends to Gauteng province, where messages are now circulating that there's an imminent attack to foreign nationals, particularly targeting those from West Africa.
Some members of Occupy Africa Unity Square, an organization led by Itai Dzamara, who's been missing for almost a month now, are pressing 91-year-old President Robert Mugabe to step down, say they are now living in fear as they are being allegedly followed by suspected members of Zimbabwe's National Spy Network, the Central Intelligence Organization, or CIO. These fears come at a time when President Mugabe is on an official visit to South Africa, where protesters are demanding that he should find Dzamara. Our correspondent Ivan Chifera reports from the capital, Harare.
Dzamara's close associates at the National Youth Action Alliance told Studio 7 that the harassment allegedly intensified during the Easter weekend and some of them had to spend the holiday away from their homes. Steven Svanda of the Mawambokusile Dawn Party, who worked closely with Dzamara, said some unidentified people have been visiting his home since last Thursday and is now fearing for his life.
I saw the car idling parked by my gate. Then I left the house the following morning around 3 a.m. The car was still there. With one man, the driver was seated. The car was still on. The back door was slightly opened. I left it there. And then I saw it on Friday night. I then saw it on Saturday around 10 in the morning. I then saw it on Sunday.
He, however, said this won't deter him from the fight to free Dzamara and force President Robert Mugabe to step down. They accuse Mr. Mugabe of running down the economy and human rights violations. Another activist, Lloyd Masarirambi, who claimed that he survived an assassination attempt in the city center last Wednesday, said he spent the Easter holiday away from home, following a tip-off from friends that some unknown people were waiting for him at his home.
On Friday, a colleague phoned me. "Where are you?" I said, "In Fakose." He said, "Don't come home. Stay where you are." On Saturday morning, he phoned me again. "Where are you?" I said, "I'm in my way to home." Then he said, "Okay, find somewhere to go. Don't come back home." So I spent the weekend in Norton.
The activists, who have since made a report to their lawyers, said they were reluctant to approach the police as they have been previously harassed by the law enforcing agents. Police spokesperson, Senior Assistant Commissioner Charity Charamba, was not available for comment. Occupy Africa Unit Square Deputy Chairman and Acting Spokesman Dirk Frey said harassment of activists will not detract them from their cause.
Despite all those challenges, security is one of our main focuses. But at the same time, we cannot stop what we're doing. And so we're carrying on with our programs. We are organizing to push on with street demonstrations and to keep the pressure up to have Itai released.
Frey said the group is worried that despite the police promise to find Zamara, they have not come up with anything credible about his whereabouts. Meanwhile, Zamara's lawyers, led by Charles Kwaramba of Mbizo, Mchade Hama and Makwani Legal Practitioners, have filed a contempt of court application against the police and CIO for failing to comply with an earlier order for them to report progress on his search fortnightly to the Registrar of the High Court until his whereabouts have been established. Zamara was allegedly abducted by state security agents early last month who were traveling in a white Isuzu twin cab vehicle with a blurred registration number plate in Harare's Glenview 7 suburb. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Thanks, Ivan. Meanwhile, President Mugabe arrived in South Africa today for an official visit amid reports that some protesters had gathered at the Oliver Tambo International Airport, where they were expected to urge Mugabe to find Zamara. At the same time, Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition said in a statement, President Mugabe should ensure that Zamara is found as soon as possible.
The leadership of the Harare Metropolitan Residents Forum, a grouping of residents' associations from Harare, Chitungwiza, Rua and Norton, is tonight meeting with Chipinge residents to address the controversial issue of smart prepaid water meters. The Chipinge Town Council is tomorrow morning expected to hold a public tender for the supply of 2,000 prepaid water meters, a move the residents are rejecting. Harare Metropolitan Residents Forum and Combined Harare Residents Association Chairperson Simbarashe Moyo told Studio 7 they are in Chipinge to offer support to the residents in the same way they have supported all other residents across the country who are against the installation of the water meters.
AMREF has made a resolution that whenever we hear of these raw authorities, towns, it is talking about installing prepaid water meters or any discussion around the issue of the installation of prepaid water meters, we will definitely make sure that we deploy our leadership to make sure that they go there and discuss with the residents. It's sort of a broader civic education agenda that we have where we want the residents to have all the information about these so-called prepaid water meters. So what we are doing now is to make sure that we send a small delegation to Chipinge. Today, it is going to have a meeting with the residents or key representatives of the residents in Chipinge to plan for what is going to happen tomorrow. We are being told that tomorrow there is going to be the public tendering of the prepaid water meters by the Chipinge Town Council.
Are you not going to be seen as inciting Chipinge residents to reject these prepaid water meters?
Definitely, our intention is not to incite anyone. Our intention is to share information that we have gathered through a number of researches that we have carried out in Harare and even in Bulawayo in relation to the issue of prepaid water meters, the pros and cons, why we are saying all these local authorities must be for now stop the installation of prepaid water meters. So this is actually an information sharing trip that we have with the residents of Chipinge.
That was Harare Metropolitan Residents Forum Chairperson Simbarashe Moyo speaking with Studio 7 from Chipinge, Manicaland Province.
Scores of foreigners, including Zimbabweans living in South Africa's port city of Durban, are reported to have fled their homes and sought refuge in police stations after weekend xenophobic attacks following alleged remarks by Zulu King Goodwill Zwelithini that all foreigners should go back to their homelands by the end of this month. Zwelithini is reported to have made the remarks last week, although he later said he had been misquoted. President Jacob Zuma's eldest son, Edward, also echoed the same sentiments, adding that foreigners were being used as cheap labor at the expense of locals. President Zuma, through his spokesman Mark Maharaj, later issued a statement assuring foreigners that they were safe as long as they had the proper documentation. However, tensions remained high today, with foreigners in all major cities on high alert as fears of an imminent xenophobic attack continue to spread. We spoke to Chairman Ngabuto Nicholas Mabena of Zimbabwean Community in South Africa about the xenophobic attacks.
Well, the statement by His Majesty the King of the Zulu Nation was very unfortunate, in that we believe it caused the attack of foreign nationals in Isipingo in Durban. And there's a lot of fear within the foreign nationals in South Africa, particularly now it extends to Gauteng province, where messages are now circulating that there's an imminent attack to foreign nationals, particularly targeting those from West Africa and from Asia. So there's a lot of fear within this community.
Now, can you tell us what exactly is happening, especially amongst Zimbabweans?
Well, people are talking about it on social media, and also organizations like Anti-Xenophobia Forum and other progressive South African organizations are now engaging communities to desist from xenophobia tendencies. And the government and the ruling party, they are basically trying to isolate these as a criminal activity, not as a policy by the South African government or by South Africans in general. This is what is happening.
And that was Ngabuto Nicholas Mabena, chairman of the Zimbabwean community in South Africa. He spoke to Studio 7 from Johannesburg in South Africa.
Local media reports indicating that some top diamond mining companies are likely to merge have unsettled displaced Zimbabweans who were relocated to other Transau and some civic organizations. They say the merger may further complicate the fulfillment of promises made when Anjin Investments of China and others started mining diamonds in this eastern part of the country. Our correspondent Lloyd Amoyo has the story.
Some locals in Chiazwa communal lands, Manicaland province, say the companies that are proposing the merger have not yet spelled out how they will compensate them for lost fields and the provision of proper accommodation. According to Mines Minister Walter Chidakwa, the proposed merger of all diamond mines in Chiazwa, DTZO Zegdio in Chimanimani, and Murowa Diamonds in Tshavane are expected to form a big company with a combined shareholding of 50%, with the government owning the other stake. The government and some stakeholders say this arrangement is expected to promote accountability in the mining of diamonds. There has been an outcry over the years, with most Zimbabweans saying they are not benefiting from diamond sales. Some diamond watchdogs have also claimed the country is losing billions of dollars in potential revenue due to lack of accountability in the mining and selling of the gems. Marvin Mudiwa of Chiazwa, who is also chairperson of the Chiazwa Community Development Trust, says this proposed merger is hounding displaced villagers.
What is happening? They always keep it a secret, guarded secret all the time, each time anything is happening. So we don't know, because we have got a lot of questions. Who is going to take over the burden of the monies that these companies are owing retrenched workers?
Director of the Zimbabwe Natural Resources Dialogue Forum, Freeman Boso, echoed the same sentiments, adding that the company merger would cause serious legal challenges despite its good intentions.
Secondly, we've got outstanding issues with regards to money that was supposed to be dispersed into community ownership trust. So in the event that there is a merger, we might have a legal logjam where communities might not find anyone to sort restitution for the monies that were supposed to be put in the community ownership trust. So the merger comes as a good development, but it also exposes the outstanding and hanging issues with regards to community access and beneficiation.
Boso says many outstanding promises between villagers and the companies would prove to be a major hurdle and a thorny issue to address under a new setup.
it might also bring about technical challenges and legal challenges in terms of the shareholdings of the companies that are said to be going into a merger. It also raises questions on the outstanding issues that communities have been asking for.
Solomon Mungure of the Institute for Peace, Leadership and Governance at the Africa University in Mutare shares the same views.
Environmental pollution that has been happening in Chiazo and other costs have been accruing owing to one of the companies. Will the new company inherit that too? Because if we can't make sure that those things happen, then obviously the merger is actually one of the, it's a perpetuation of the old legacy. If it becomes a perpetuation of the old legacy and government is presiding over that, it gives a bad name to government too.
Mungure says what is required is to deal with the issues of relocated people and those still in Chiazwa before the merger. He says that the government should realize that any merger without tangible resolutions of pertinent issues of villagers would be in vain.
For example, one of my grievances is that if we have not sorted out the mess of mining which has been happening over the past 10 years, we cannot expect a merger to solve that.
It still remains to be seen whether some of these issues will be addressed before the merger, following years of conflict between the diamond mining firms and local communities. Reporting for Studio 7 in Mutare, this is Loida Moyo.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
Zimbabwean businessman Shingi Munyeza speaks about the state of Zimbabwe tourism.
And Studio 7's Ndebele and Shona shows celebrate 12 years of existence.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Hundreds of Kenyan students marched through downtown Nairobi to honor those who died in last week's massacre at Garissa University. The demonstrators gathered on the final day of an official three-day mourning period to share stories of the 148 students killed and press the government for greater national security in the wake of the attack.
The International Committee of the Red Cross says its first flight transporting medical personnel to Yemen has reached the capital, Sana'a.
And a 100-year-old Japanese woman became the world's first centenarian to complete a 1,500-meter freestyle swimming competition.
And finally, a fourth man in New York City is facing charges in a previously announced plot to provide material support to Islamic State militants.
The Ministry of Health says Zimbabweans should try their best to treat drinking water in order to avoid waterborne illnesses. Dr. Portia Manangazira, head of the Epidemiology and Disease Control Unit, says Zimbabweans who do not treat water risk contracting cholera, typhoid and related diseases. She speaks to Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo about shortages of water in some parts of Zimbabwe and fears over the outbreak of contagious diseases.
We continue as a ministry to appeal to the local authorities and other players who provide water for particularly the urban population to assist and provide the water, but to the communities, because we know that it's long time in coming. We've been mentioning that from time to time without much movement in terms of availing safe water of the right quantities. So it then translates into all these diarrhea and enteric diseases and a host of other, you know, health challenges. So we continue giving the messages to the communities just to render the water that they have available safe.
Looking at some of these challenges, what is the ministry doing to make sure that the public understands what they should do?
3 weeks ago, the minister had a press conference just to remind people again of hand washing, making sure that they boil or chlorinate water at the point that they are using it. So it's an ongoing process, but one would really wish that we had a situation where water was available and of food quality to every citizen in the country. And it would actually safeguard a whole lot of health challenges. We particularly worry about the children under the age of 5 because we continue to lose them. And they complicate, you know, when a child is diarrhea and vomiting, they already drop weight. So they miss out on some of their milestones or they get delayed. We want the children to grow up and be healthy.
That was Dr. Portia Manangazira, head of Zimbabwe's Epidemiology and Disease Control Unit. She was speaking with Studio 7 from Harare.
Former Africa Sun Limited Chief Executive Dr. Shingi Munyeza says Zimbabwe is still struggling to realize its full potential in the key tourism sector. Munyeza says there's need for Harare to invest heavily in infrastructure development and protect its image to be an attractive destination. The respected businessman stepped down from the helm of hospitality group Africa Sun Limited after 13 years. Munyeza, though, is the owner of Mug and Bean, Ocean Basket and News Cafe franchises in Zimbabwe. According to the Zimbabwe Tourism Authority's 2014 Tourism Overview Report, Zimbabwe's tourist arrivals went up 2.6% in 2014, buoyed by arrivals from Africa, Europe and America.
There were 1,600,496 tourist arrivals from African countries, 137,465 arrivals from Europe, and 66,826 arrivals from America in the year under review. This growth is 0.7 percentage points below the sub-Saharan growth of 3.3%. There was growth in arrivals from all of the country's major source regions except the Asia region. Zimbabwe still receives 85% of tourist arrivals from low-value markets. In the period under review, tourism receipts recorded a marginal percent decline from $856 million to $827 million. Munyeza tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu it's time for leadership renewal at African Sun.
Well, I need to emphasize that this is not because it was thought a few days ago. This has been a plan over the past 4 years. And with its own milestones that I had indicated to the board and to some of my key shareholders that I needed to pass on the baton to another leader, that I had done my bit and that we needed to see another crop of management coming up to take over the group. So I'd done my best, I'd taken the company, but one of the conditions was that I'd leave, make sure that I left the company in a strong shape, a strong balance sheet, but with also a strong board so that they'll be able to take the company to the next level.
So does this mean you no longer have any interest in Africa Sun?
No, that, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying as a manager, I have nothing more to give.
But after 13 years in this industry, what would you say are the key things that you have learned over the years?
Well, number one is that this industry is a very sensitive industry as far as perceptions are concerned. I have been in the industry longer than 13 years, but in African Sun, it's been 13 years. But it is very sensitive and it requires vigilance in what you do and what you say. Because at a national level, the industry needs to be connected politically, economically, as well as socially. The next thing is that I've also learned that we are endowed with some of the best attractions in the world, and we still are to maximize on those attractions. The third thing is that we have a beautiful hospitality culture, which also still needs to be tapped into to ensure that we get the best returns on it. So we've got some of the best people. Our culture of hospitality and service just needs to be helped along so that it shined in at a global scale. Last but not least is that it is through partnerships that this industry works.
But what needs to be done, Dr. Munyeza, in the short term and long term to ensure that the country maximizes on tourism?
The first and foremost thing under the Zimaset that is there, it needs to ensure a significant investment in our infrastructure to the enablers in tourism are your connectivity, which is your road, your rail, your air connectivity, but also not to outdo the telecoms so that we are on top of the game. E-commerce is now the standard thing world over, and we are still trying to get to grips with that.
Lastly, Dr. Munyeza, I think there are complaints from some quarters that Zimbabwe is not tapping that much into the domestic tourism. What needs to be done?
It's a liquidity issue. It's not so much that Zimbabwe is not tapping into the domestic tourism. It's a liquidity. People have no money. Even if I offered people to go to Vic Falls for free for a weekend, just to get there, number one, it's just a transport cost. And remember that when tourism is leisure, travel is at the bottom of somebody's needs. People are grappling with issues of food, bread, school fees for their children, and so on. So once that begins to be sorted out and the economy is turning in that direction, the domestic tourism will take care of itself.
That was businessman and former Africa Sun Limited Chief Executive Dr. Shingi Munyeza speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Most nations marked World Health Day today, with this year's celebrations focusing on deaths caused by foodborne illnesses. According to the United Nations, this is a time to highlight the challenges and opportunities associated with food safety under the slogan, From Farm to Plate, Make Food Safe. The UN estimates that 2 million deaths occur every year from contaminated food or drinking water. Tonight on Studio 7, we will also be focusing on youth productive health as Zimbabweans join other nations in marking World Health Day.
Students working on sexual and reproductive health action team, or say what, say there's need for increased dialogue between parents and youths on the issue of sexual health and behavior. The organization, which promotes healthy sexual and reproductive rights, says access to education and health is a right for all, including young Zimbabweans who traditionally and culturally have been viewed as not being sexually active. Director of Students Working on Sexual and Reproductive Health Action Team, Jimmy Wilford, spoke to Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo about sexual behavior among youths and related issues.
There are so many capacity building initiatives that we do that involves young people, where we are taking them through process for them to understand the challenges that are associated about being sexually active. In any way, really grill them, give them as much information as possible, that whenever they so decide to make a decision, they make informed decisions. Because we all say, health is your right, and at the same time, it's your responsibility. As a young person, you must know that whichever decision that you take, you must be prepared to face the consequences that come afterwards. So generally, the same applies to the issue to do with being sexually active. Young people, like you rightly said, due to a number of factors, which I might necessarily be able to mention right now, they are becoming sexually active at an early age. So what we are saying as an institution is, these young people should make informed decisions about their sexual life.
And are young people open to being educated and having the knowledge that they need?
As a country, we are more or less like a conservative nation. You know, any issues to do with the sex and sexuality are not easily discussed.
That was Director of Students Working on Sexual and Reproductive Health Action Team, Jimmy Wilford, speaking to Studio 7 from Harare.
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our Youth Connection host will be talking with listeners and experts about sexual health among youths as various nations mark World Health Day. This is Jonga Kandemire.
And I'm Chris Gande, wishing you a pleasant night, Zimbabwe.